One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Imagine a Revolutionary War soldier navigating the misty forests of New Jersey, only to glimpse a hulking, shadowy figure slipping through the trees, a creature covered in thick fur with eyes that glint red in the dark. Or picture scouts on the cliffs of New England, staring in horror as a massive serpent undulates through the water below, vanishing as quickly as it appeared. These tales aren't just folklore. They're eerie accounts shared in logs and letters from soldiers and settlers who dared explore the uncharted wilds of early America. In this episode, we're diving into the most mysterious cryptid encounters of the Revolutionary War.
Hello, citizen. This content creator is a confirmed conspiracy theorist and has been subject to repeated penalties for spreading controversial rhetoric. Please proceed with caution. Trust the government. Remain silent. Your compliance is appreciated and, of course, non-negotiable.
Hey guys, welcome to the 21CD podcast. If you're looking for a sign that you may be in danger, this is it. As always, I am your ghost, John. Here today, but tomorrow is never promised. So protect your kids, protect yourselves, and always question the narrative. If you like the show, Google us and follow us everywhere. Please also check out 21CDstudios.com for merch and other stuff. And folks, we need all the help we can get. So tell your friends about us. All right, bye. One of the most compelling cryptid sightings of the Revolutionary War involves Commodore Stephen Decatur, a prominent American naval officer who reportedly had a close encounter with a creature known as the Jersey Devil. Decatur's story is one of the few reported sightings from the Revolutionary War era, lending a historical edge to the folklore. Decatur, though best known for his heroics in the early 1800s, is said to have had a brush with the Jersey Devil during a munitions testing exercise around the Pine Barrens during the Revolutionary War. According to the tale, Decatur was overseeing a series of cannon tests near Burlington, New Jersey, to ensure the accuracy and firepower of the artillery his men would soon use in battle. One late afternoon, as the exercises wrapped up, Decatur and his men spotted something strange in the distance. A creature took flight from the woods and soared high above the field, heading straight toward the line of cannons. Witnesses described the creature as dark, with bat-like wings, a goat-like head, and hooves, as well as a long tail, which is a striking match to the description of the Jersey Devil that we know today. Intrigued and unnerved, of course, Decatur ordered one of his men to aim at the creature and fire. When the cannon was lit, it roared and the projectile shot into the air, striking the creature in what should have been a fatal blow. Maybe it was grape shot or something like that, which resembles a very large shotgun munition. But rather than plummeting to the ground, the creature simply shrugged off the hit, its wings beating as it continued to fly over the men's head, letting out a ghastly scream before disappearing into the tree line. The soldiers were left in stunned silence, of course, unable to comprehend how something so large had survived a direct cannon shot. The story spread quickly among soldiers and locals who were already familiar with tales of the Jersey Devil and its unsettling cries. Decatur's men, who were seasoned and not easily spooked, insisted on what they had seen and continued to tell the story to the others. The sighting contributed to the legend of the Jersey Devil as sort of an otherworldly creature, not something that's just from the woods in North America. It's invulnerable to conventional weapons, it seems, and able to defy human explanation and science. Skeptics argue that this tale is, of course, exaggerated, or the result of stress from battle and superstition among soldiers, but others see it as a credible story, given Decatur's respected position and the wide number of witnesses that were present that day. Decatur himself never publicly commented on the encounter, perhaps wary of damaging his credibility, but those close to him claimed he privately confirmed the story until his death. The Decatur sighting, set against the backdrop of the Revolutionary War, has become one of the enduring stories that ties the Jersey Devil to American history. This was not a creature who was merely a product of colonial superstition, but an actual active presence during a period of great conflict. It was an unexplainable terror that haunted the very people fighting to establish this nation. Decatur, for those who don't know, wasn't no chump. This was a very well-known and distinguished individual. Commodore Stephen Decatur is best known as an American naval hero who achieved fame during the early 19th century, particularly for his daring exploits in the First and Second Barbary Wars, as well as the War of 1812. Decatur became a celebrated figure for his courage, his patriotism, and his leadership, and he was one of the first military figures in the United States to be dubbed a national hero. During the First Barbary War, Decatur led a daring raid in Tripoli Harbor to destroy the captured American frigate, the USS Philadelphia, which had run aground and fallen into enemy hands. So to prevent the ship from being used by the Barbary pirates, Decatur and his men disguised themselves, infiltrated the harbor, boarded the vessel, and set it ablaze. British Admiral Lord Nelson allegedly called this act the most bold and daring act of the age, solidifying Decatur's reputation. Decatur also distinguished himself in hand-to-hand combat in the Tripoli Harbor in 1804. Where he famously avenged his brother James Decatur's death in a fierce fight with an enemy captain. During the War of 1812, Decatur commanded the frigate the USS United States and achieved a notable victory over the British frigate the HMS Macedonian, capturing it in fierce naval combat. His victory was one of the few bright spots for the United States in the early stages of that war, boosting morale and symbolizing American resolve. So this guy wasn't really just any old dude who arrived to America on a boat. This guy, he was a pretty profound figure, pretty well known, pretty well respected, and not really the guy who would just make something like a dragon, which is what I think the Jersey Devil is, up out of thin air. So where did the Jersey Devil come from then? And what is it exactly? Let's start at the beginning with Mother Leeds and her infamous 13th child. Now, it's one thing to call a baby cursed, but how many tales of cursed children go on to terrorize generations for over 300 years? According to the origin legend of the Jersey Devil, Deborah Leeds, who was isolated in the depths of the Pine Barrens, cursed her unborn 13th child. She didn't want to have another kid. But here's the twist. The Leeds family wasn't just any family. They had political enemies, big ones. Their feud with none other than Benjamin Franklin himself got vicious as he slandered the Leeds Almanac as satanic. Conveniently, a devilish child with supernatural powers fit right into this feud. It's not hard to imagine that Franklin's propaganda helped twist public opinion against the Leeds family, cementing the story of this beast in American folklore. Now, why does this matter? Because history has a habit of concealing the truth under layers of legend. The Leeds family may have truly birthed something otherworldly. I'm not saying they didn't. Some kind of creature that even Benjamin Franklin feared, and their story was twisted into a warning, which is, stay out of the Pine Barrens, or the devil will get you. But the Jersey Devil wasn't just scaring kids. It also has a history of messing with soldiers. The Revolutionary War wasn't just a human conflict. Something otherworldly was also happening, and it not only was happening across the whole globe, but it was also happening right here in America in the woods. Continental and British troops stationed near the Pine Barrens constantly reported hearing unnatural, bone-chilling screams echoing through the forests at night, so terrifying they froze men in their tracks at times. Some soldiers claimed that these cries weren't random. They happened before big battles or heavy losses, as if the Jersey Devil was an omen of death. There are even accounts of soldiers seeing the creature. In 1778, a group of British troops claimed that they spotted it hovering over their campfire, and it was this flying beast with glowing red eyes. They tried to shoot it, but bullets didn't do anything. It just vanished into the night. So imagine that, these battle-hardened soldiers, armed and ready for anything, terrified by some creature that seemed unkillable. Because these guys, in this time, everything they ate had to be killed. They were skilled hunters. They probably had had many run-ins with bears and wolves and wildcats and knew what they sounded like and looked like in the nighttime. So what kind of beast was this? For these men, the Jersey Devil wasn't just folklore. It was real. It was a malevolent entity that turned the forest into enemy territory. While livestock kills are commonly attributed to the Jersey Devil, there are stories that go even darker. Locals from the Pine Barrens, especially those who lived in isolated farmhouses, spoke of children disappearing without a trace. These weren't just accidents or runaways either. Some say that the children were taken by the devil itself, plucked it from the woods, or lured away by strange sounds or music. One local legend tells of a young girl who was about 12, who vanished after going to fetch some water from a stream. Her parents found absolutely nothing but claw marks near the riverbank and hoof-like footprints leading back into the woods. If you remember, one of the traits of the Jersey Devil is it is allegedly a hooved being. Other stories suggest that the Jersey Devil's attacks weren't limited to the past. In the early 1900s, during the so-called Week of Terror, dozens of sightings of the Jersey Devil rocked southern New Jersey, causing mass hysteria. People reported seeing the creature lurking in alleyways and perched on rooftops. The police were called in, and one officer allegedly shot the beast point blank. But again, the creature seemed unfazed, and he just disappeared into the night. Witnesses claimed that during this week, a rash of unexplainable injuries and even a few deaths occurred. Though no one could definitively link them to the Jersey Devil, that's kind of what people were hinting at. So is this a coincidence? The Jersey Devil isn't just a historical mystery, as you can see. There are strands that lead it here to the modern times, making it a modern day monster. In 2015, a man near Galloway Township snapped a photo of a bizarre batwing creature with hooves flying near a golf course. The photo, though blurry, is extremely odd, showing this sort of dark-winged figure in mid-flight with a shape that matches classic descriptions of the Jersey Devil. But was it a prank or not? We do live in an age where almost anything can be made up, and it all looks pretty real these days, not gonna lie. Then there's this truck driver who spotted the devil along Route 9 in 2013. He pulled over to get a better look at what he described as a hideous face and eyes that burned like fire. The creature stared him down before just disappearing into the shadows, sort of melting back into the darkness. This wasn't some out-of-towner looking for attention. This was a local driver who had no reason to make something like this up. Theories surrounding the Jersey Devil go beyond typical cryptid lore, though. Some say it's a supernatural entity summoned by occult practices. And honestly, if you look into it deep enough, it shares a lot of correlations with another known cryptid, a well-known cryptid, Mothman. But the occult practices idea is a theory backed by the Pine Barrens' history of witchcraft. There's sort of rumors of mystical and mysterious disappearances attributed to this cryptid and these occult practices. Others suggest that it's a government experiment gone wrong, a mutated creature released, or one that escaped from a military facility or a lab. New Jersey's Pine Barrens cover over 1 million acres, which makes it a perfect hiding ground for a creature that wants to remain out of sight. Maybe it's not a product of a Leeds curse or some kind of vengeful spirit, but a literal monster more akin to the Nephilim or the Elohim experiments, the splicing of genetics long into the past, creating these hybrid creatures. Could be something like that. Could also be an interdimensional being that has no ties to good or evil and is just an interdimensional creature that just comes and goes, and sometimes you see it and sometimes you interact with it and sometimes you don't, and it just sort of wanders through the woods, sometimes preying on you, sometimes not. There's something about the Jersey Devil that just doesn't fit into the typical cryptid profile. It's been sighted for centuries. It defies bullets. It vanishes without a trace. And it's left behind a disturbing trail of sort of physical evidence and reports. They found these weird hoof prints next to dead livestock that doesn't really make sense. Why would a predator have hooves? That's not typical. So is all of this, again, just mass hysteria? Some sort of weird series of hoaxes that have come to life? Or is there actually something out there? For centuries, locals have lived in fear of the Pine Barrens and the creature that roams there. The legend persists, and sightings do continue. Eyewitnesses describe something eerily consistent throughout the years. Something that's managed to stay hidden in an era where cameras are literally everywhere. But our theory on that is that cameras can't always pick these types of creatures up, these interdimensional beings. And Decatur, believe it or not, is not the only celebrity to have seen the beast. Joseph Bonaparte, the elder brother of Napoleon Bonaparte and former King of Spain, is said to have had his own eerie encounter with the Jersey Devil while living in Bordentown, New Jersey, in the early 19th century. Bonaparte had moved to New Jersey in 1816 after being exiled from Europe, and he settled on a grand estate known as Point Breeze, where he spent years in peace. However, his time there would include a story that he claimed he would never forget. One snowy afternoon, Bonaparte was out hunting in the woods surrounding his estate, and as he moved through the forest, he noticed strange tracks in the snow, and the prints were unlike anything that he had seen before, cloven hooves, but spaced kind of widely, and that suggested that the creature walked on two legs rather than four. Curious and unnerved, Bonaparte decided to follow the tracks deeper into the woods. As he moved, he heard rustling in the trees and the faint sound of something moving just out of sight. Suddenly, he came face to face with a creature that he would later describe as a hideous apparition, with a long, thin body, large wings, cloven hooves, and a head resembling that of a horse or a goat. Its eyes glowed with a strange sort of red light, and it exuded an unnatural presence that sent a chill through him. The creature reportedly stared at him for a moment, its fiery eyes locking onto his. And then it let out an unearthly screech. With a flap of its massive wings, it took off into the air and vanished above the trees. Bonaparte, shaken of course, returned to his estate and reported the experience to his friends and servants, who informed him that he had likely encountered the legendary Jersey Devil. Bonaparte's sighting added a layer of credibility to the whole Jersey Devil legend, as he was another respected figure and not one to be easily swayed by superstition. Locals were already familiar with tales of the Jersey Devil, but having somebody like the brother of Napoleon Bonaparte, an esteemed European nobleman, confirm an encounter definitely lent the story a little more legitimacy. Bonaparte continued to live on his estate, but he reportedly kept his distance from the woods after that day, unwilling to risk another meeting with the creature. Pretty wild stuff. And in my opinion, I do believe that the Jersey Devil is a dragon. I think North America had a dragon problem back in these days, before the Europeans arrived, at least on a massive scale. I think that North America was literally filled with dragons, and that the Jersey Devil is just one of the ones that managed to remain a little bit longer than the others. There's another bizarre creature that appeared to be crawling around during the Revolutionary War time that is equally, if not more, strange. Imagine a massive panther-like beast covered in scales and fur as well, claws sharp as knives, very long, with a spiked tail and sometimes even horns or antlers coming out of its head. Descriptions vary, but the consistent image is a powerful amphibious monster that lurks beneath the surface of the Great Lakes. The Ojibwe and other Algonquin tribes have known about this creature known as Mishapishu for centuries. They didn't just fear it, they respected it and even worshipped it, believing it to be the guardian of underground realms and a ruler over water and storms. And this isn't just some campfire story, it's a being that they acknowledged as an entity that was not to be trifled with. Offerings were made to it, ceremonies were held, and even today there's a sense of don't mess with the water in those areas. I live in the Great Lakes region. This is very much a thing. These lakes are scary, guys. I'm serious, there's stuff that goes on in there. But things get really strange with Mishapishu. During the Revolutionary War era, the Great Lakes were more than just bodies of water. They were critical routes for traders, soldiers, and scouts moving through the wilderness. And they go to the ocean. You can get to the Great Lakes from the ocean. Sightings were not just confined to Native Americans who had a spiritual understanding of the creature, though. Colonial explorers, fur traders, and even soldiers reported strange disturbances, even stranger sounds, and glimpses of something massive and unexplainable moving through the water. One early encounter story comes from a man named La Fontaine, who was a French trapper. In 1779, he was out on Lake Superior when he claimed to see something that still defies explanation. He described a huge, scaled creature with blazing cat-like eyes rising from the depths. Here's the kicker though, he wasn't alone in this claim. After his sighting, several other fur traders reported a very similar encounter around Lake Superior and Lake Michigan. La Fontaine barely made it back to shore, as he says, and after telling his story to the local Ojibwe, they informed him that he had been chosen, if you will, to see Mishapishu, and that only his ceremonial offerings had saved him from being pulled under. Even soldiers stationed near the Great Lakes reported eerie encounters. Some claimed to see something in the water, watching them, its eyes reflecting back like embers in the night. In 1780, a company of American soldiers heard what they described as unearthly growling and a series of loud splashes that seemed to have no source. They were encamped along Lake Huron and heard the sounds coming from deep within the lake. No animals were nearby, though, and therefore they didn't really have an explanation. They chalked it up to supernatural forces and spread word throughout their ranks to stay cautious. One compelling encounter with Mishapeshu comes from a report in 1892 by two Ojibwe men, Mijinawa and his nephew Amek, near the shores of Lake Superior. This account has been passed down in the Ojibwe community and later shared with regional historians, and it kind of stands out for the detail in its description and the cultural significance that it holds. Their experience is still spoken of in Ojibwe communities and remains one of the most mysterious stories involving this water panther, which is what Mishapeshu has come to be nicknamed. So, it goes a little like this. Mizinawa was a well-respected elder in the Ojibwe tribe, and he had spent much of his life hunting and fishing and navigating the Great Lakes. He was well-versed in its lore as well. These people are very engrossed in the legends and lore and oral histories of the areas in which they live. In the summer of 1892, he and Domic set out on a fishing trip along Lake Superior's shoreline. As was customary, they offered a small tobacco bundle to the water, which was a traditional practice to appease Mishapeshu, asking for safe passage and a successful hunt. That night, as they made camp along a remote section of shore, they settled by a small fire and listened to the sound of the waves. Lake Superior was calm that night, and the stars reflected on its glassy surface. But around midnight, the wind began to shift, and the lake took on an eerie silence, broken only by the occasional slap of water against the rocks. Amek recalls feeling a strange tension in the air, as if something unseen was observing them from the depths. Suddenly, a low growling noise echoed across the water, and it was not like any animal they knew. It was a deep, guttural, and vibrating sound, as though coming from the lake itself. They looked out, and they saw something slowly emerging from the center of the lake, roughly 50 yards from their campsite. It was a large, dark shape, and it was beginning to rise from the water, illuminated by the moonlight. It had a long, scaled body and what appeared to be sharp spines running along its back. Its head was distinctly feline, but with horns or some kind of antlers that caught the moonlight, and its eyes did indeed glow with some kind of unnatural light. Mijinawa instinctively told Amek to look down and not make direct eye contact with the creature, a traditional Ojibwe belief for dealing with spirits or supernatural beings. The men turned their gaze downward, but they could still see the outline of Mishapeshu in their peripheral vision. The creature let out another low growl, almost like a warning. They described feeling a powerful force pressing down on them, as if the creature's gaze alone carried an immense weight. As their heads were lowered, Mijinawa reached into his pack and took out the remaining tobacco. He then threw it into the lake, reciting a prayer to appease Mishapeshu, asking it to accept their offering and allow them safe passage. But then the creature made a strange hissing sound and slowly submerged back into the water, disappearing into the depths as suddenly as it had appeared. The water around them began to churn, allegedly, and a series of massive waves crashed against the shore, drenching their campsite and putting out the fire. Mijinawa and Amek were left shaken, and they stared into the dark waters where the creature had been, expecting it to return. Not wanting to wait and find out, they packed up their belongings and left immediately, making their way inland before the first light. Now, this encounter is, of course, oral history. It has been passed down from person to person in the Ojibwe tribe. And when that happens, absolutely a bit of legend sort of attaches itself to the bones of history, and the story grows. And so, yes, there may be a little bit here that seems too fanciful to be true, and maybe it is. But what I'm seeing is yet another example of a dragon in North America, the stories of which have continued for quite some time, starting way back when and reaching until now. It must have been quite an experience for the stories to last so long. This encounter left a deep impact on Mijinawa and Amik, who saw it as a warning. They interpreted the sighting as Mishapeshu asserting its guardianship over the lake, reminding them of its power and presence. Mijinawa shared the story within his community, emphasizing the importance of respect and reverence for the lake's spirit. He claimed that had they not made the offering or shown proper respect, Mishapeshu might have simply attacked or even dragged them beneath the water. And this encounter became part of local lore, and it's still shared in Ojibwe oral history as a powerful reminder of Mishapeshu's presence. To this day, many Ojibwe people leave offerings when fishing or traveling on Lake Superior, respecting the water panther as both a spiritual protector and a fierce guardian. While skeptics might see this story as just folklore, like we just said, those who've experienced the vastness and creepiness, general horror of the Great Lakes, particularly at night, might understand why the Ojibwe continue to honor Mishapeshu's power. Arguably scarier than the ocean. I don't know. And I didn't say that. I said that, but I didn't say that. I'm just saying, there's something wrong with them lakes. And, you know, they've found structures in the lakes that seem to defy all logic. Megaliths that shouldn't be there. There is the Lake Michigan Triangle, where all sorts of anomalies occur, similar to the anomalies that occur in the Bermuda Triangle. There's just a lot of weird stuff. Some modern researchers believe Mishapeshu isn't just a creature, but a guardian of something that may be hidden beneath the Great Lakes, similar to how a dragon is a guardian of treasure or knowledge. There are Native American stories that hint at underground passages and sacred spaces under the lakes, places that have great power and spiritual significance. Some alternative thinkers believe these aren't just myths, but actual hidden realms, entrances to underground caverns, or even lost civilizations beneath the lakes. There's been a lot of civilizations that have come in contact with the lakes, and many of which we might not even know about, to be honest. For instance, there's a part of me that believes that even ancient Egyptians have made contact with the Great Lakes. Mishapeshu, in this view, then, isn't simply some monster. It's a protector, ensuring that no one ventures too deep or unlocks secrets that are meant to remain hidden. Things that are meant to remain protected until a certain time. Protectors of prophecy. The creature is thought to have the power to manipulate the very weather as well, stirring up violent storms to dissuade anyone who dares to encroach too closely on its domain. The idea here is that the lakes themselves might actually hold hidden relics, some kind of ancient technology or powerful artifacts, some kind of remnants of a time long before recorded history. Mishapeshu, then, is truly a guardian, positioned to keep these secrets safe from whoever may come looking for them. And this might sound outlandish, right? But that's one of the great things of the 21CD podcast, is we can say outlandish things. We can ask outlandish questions. And I'll wager, if you ask any sailor who's faced some kind of sudden, unexplained squall in the Great Lakes, you might just find a believer among them as well. But it's not just ancient legends that add to the mystique, right? The Great Lakes are notorious for their underwater graveyards as well, with hundreds of ships having vanished under mysterious circumstances. Lake Superior alone has claimed more ships than the Bermuda Triangle. What's even stranger? Divers and explorers report magnetic anomalies in some of these lakes, especially in certain hotspots rumored to be Mishapeshu's territory. Compasses go absolutely bananas, electronic equipment fails, and some divers have reported strange sensations, as if something unseen is watching them from the depths. These underwater anomalies lend weight to the idea that there's more than meets the eye beneath the Great Lakes. It was only just recently they discovered the Great Lake Stonehenge, which we're still trying to study. Could Mishapeshu be connected to these energy disturbances, these strange megaliths, the things at the bottom of these lakes? Some researchers believe that, yeah, it's possible. This could also explain why Mishapeshu sightings have been concentrated around specific areas within the lakes, areas where these anomalies are more intense than other places. While it's easy to dismiss Mishapeshu as a creature of mere legend, sightings of large unexplained creatures in the Great Lakes are pretty common. A lot of people report seeing this kind of stuff. Fishermen, divers, even casual visitors of the lakes report seeing something massive moving beneath the surface. And there's a lot of different names for the creatures that people see in the lakes. But they could all be the same thing or part of the same family. Skeptics say it could be large sturgeon or schools of fish, but true believers know that these sightings go beyond such like simple explanations. To this day, locals in some areas around the Great Lakes hold a quiet reverence for Mishapeshu. Ceremonial offerings are still left on the shores by those who wish to avoid angering the water panther. And anyone who ventures into the lakes, especially at dusk or dawn, will tell you there's something in those waters. Something powerful and ancient, and the feeling you get just defies explanation. It's the darkest, blackest thing you will ever experience. Whether Mishapeshu is a guardian of hidden realms or some kind of powerful supernatural force or maybe just a very well-established legend, for those who do believe, Mishapeshu is a reminder that some forces in nature are not meant to be understood or disturbed. So we have dragons. I did a lot of research for this topic, and I was noticing that so many of the cryptids being described sounded like dragons. Did America have a dragon problem, guys? Somebody needs to do a study on that. Maybe one of our next episodes will be all of the dragons that we can find recorded in America. Another well-documented cryptid encounter from the Revolutionary War period involves not a dragon, but sightings of a strange ape-like creature in the forests of, you guessed it, New Jersey. And this creature is often called the Wood Devil and has been called Big Red Eye. And these encounters, primarily reported by soldiers and scouts moving through the dense, heavily wooded areas, describe a large, hairy creature that would emit loud, unearthly screams and evade any attempt at capture or observation. During the Revolutionary War, American and British soldiers alike had to navigate these dense, wild forests of New England. And New Jersey, too, was a state that saw some of the most intense combat and skirmishes of the war. Reports from soldiers stationed in this region include strange sightings and terrifying experiences with a creature that resembled a large, ape-like beast, standing over 7 feet tall and covered in dark, shaggy fur. Soldiers frequently described hearing piercing screams echoing through the woods at night, sounds unlike anything that they had heard before, which many described as a devilish wail, a creature similar to modern depictions of Bigfoot. But there are a few unique, terrifying characteristics specific to this beast in these northeastern forests. The Wood Devil is typically described as, again, 7 to 8 feet tall with a lean, muscular build. Unlike the bulkier descriptions of Bigfoot, the wood devil has kind of a more sinewy and agile appearance, almost as if it was literally built to navigate quickly through the forests. The creature is covered in dark and shaggy fur, often described as grayish-brown or black. Its fur appears matted and thick, blending well with the shadows of the trees and the underbrush. This camouflage makes it extremely difficult to spot, especially in low light, which is why it's often only seen fleetingly. Witnesses report the creature's face as having vaguely human-like features, though with a flattened nose, deep-set eyes, and a pronounced brow ridge. The eyes are one of its most unsettling features. They are often described as glowing red or deep amber, especially in dim light or dusk. The eyes give the wood devil a knowing or intelligent kind of look, as though it's aware of being observed, and that just sort of makes it even creepier, in my opinion. The wood devil has disproportionately long arms that nearly reach its knees, similar to, again, a large ape. Witnesses describe its hands as having clawed fingers or nails that are sharp enough to leave deep marks on trees. The hands are often said to resemble a cross between human hands and claws, which would aid in climbing and moving quickly through dense forest. The creature is also reported to move both on two legs as well as four legs. When it walks on two legs, it has sort of a loping, silent gait, and it's able to blend into the shadows almost seamlessly. When moving at a high speed, witnesses say it drops to all fours and moves with a very fluid grace, which makes it appear more like an animal hunting than a creature evading sight. The wood devil is known for emitting a very distinct, terrifying scream or howl. We get a lot of reports of this kind of stuff from Bigfoot as well. It's a sound described as a mix of a human scream and a wild animal's roar. Witnesses describe the sound as both deafening and unsettling, with an intensity that appears to be felt physically. The creature often seems to use this scream to scare intruders, especially those who venture too far into what it deems its territory. Some reports mention it stalking people, moving quietly and following them without being fully seen. The wood devil's appearance, combined with its unsettling intelligence, as it appears, creates a chilling aura. This seems more like a being with some intelligence to it than just how we typically describe Bigfoot, which I think we do Bigfoot a discredit, but the fact remains that the wood devil does appear to have a little more to it. It's thin and yet powerful frame. That's a very unique feature to it. It almost reminds me of a wraith. The fact that it can vanish very quickly does make you wonder if it's interdimensional. People who have encountered it often describe a feeling of dread, which is something that is also felt when people are reportedly around cryptids like Dogman. They also report discomfort even before seeing the creature itself. It's almost as though the wood devil does have this sort of powerful predatory energy that can be felt before it's seen. One of the most detailed documented encounters with the so-called wood devil allegedly occurred in the autumn of 1778 when a Continental Army scout named Private Halsey was sent on a reconnaissance mission near the Delaware Water Gap in New Jersey. This area was known for its dense forests and rough terrain, and this provided ideal cover for both American and British forces. Halsey's mission was straightforward: survey the area for British activity and report back. But what he encountered would be anything but ordinary. Halsey's report, later recorded in his personal journal, describes his experience in chilling detail. As he moved quietly through the woods, he noticed an unsettling silence around him. Birds stopped chirping and the usual rustle of small animals and stuff like that vanished. He wasn't hearing the sounds of the forest anymore. He attributed this to his own presence until he actually heard a faint but sort of low howl echoing from deeper within the woods. Thinking it might be a signal from a hidden British scout, he froze, hiding among the trees and waiting for movement. But what he saw next shocked him. It was this tall, dark figure emerging between the trees about 50 yards ahead. According to his description, the creature stood on two legs, towered at a nearly 7 feet tall, covered in thick, shaggy fur. Halsey could see that it was muscular and had very long arms that nearly reached its knees. Its face, though obscured, had a vaguely human-like structure, but its eyes were glowing, apparently, faintly red in the light. The creature seemed to be very alert and moving purposefully, sniffing the air as if tracking something. Halsey, feeling both terrified and mesmerized, kept as still as possible, hoping to go unnoticed. But then the creature stopped and turned its head directly toward him. Locking eyes with him across the clearing, Halsey felt a sense of dread, and in his journal, he described the moment as an evil intelligence observing me, with a look that felt all too knowing and all too aware. Before he could react, the creature let out this horrifying scream that it is known for, and this sound he described as half human and half beast, and seemed to be filled with rage and sorrow. The scream echoed through the trees, its intensity almost paralyzing him. Halsey wrote that the sound was unlike anything that he had heard in his life, and that it filled him with a primal terror that he could not shake. Realizing he needed to get away, Halsey tried to back away quietly, but the creature suddenly dropped onto all fours and began moving toward him at shocking speed. He turned and ran, tearing through the forest as fast as he could, all the while hearing the creature's heavy footsteps and panting breath behind him. He didn't dare look back, though, of course, fearing that it would be the last thing that he'd ever do. After what felt like an eternity, he stumbled out of the trees and into a small clearing near his original trail. When he stopped to listen, the forest had returned to silence. It seemed as if the creature had disappeared. He immediately headed back to camp and reported his experience to his commanding officer. And while his officer was skeptical, other soldiers in the camp noted that they had heard strange sounds in the woods at night. Sounds that they had dismissed as wild animals, such as wolves, or maybe the wind. In Halsey's journal, he described the encounter in detail, though, adding that he was forever haunted by the red-eyed devil of the New Jersey woods. The experience deeply disturbed him, and he never went on another solo scouting mission. Strange sounds persisted in that area, and the story of the wood devil began to spread. Halsey's warnings were obviously taken more seriously, and many in his regiment even refused to patrol the area near the Delaware Water Gap alone after dusk. This story, along with others, has been passed down through generations, and Halsey's journal remains one of the most compelling pieces of evidence of cryptid activity during the Revolutionary War. The tale of Halsey's encounter with the Wood Devil is not only a fascinating piece of history, but also a chilling reminder of the mysterious forces that may still roam the dense forests of the Northeast. I think that one of the reasons that North America has so many national forests that are just so massive and so dense and so unexplored is because when we got here and we started moving across this land and building our cities and building our villages and expanding our technology and our abilities and all that, there were things here that we couldn't exactly beat. There were places we couldn't control or explain, and a lot of those things are in these woods. Maybe even more evidence of this wood devil. British soldiers, too, documented sightings of this guy. One notable account comes from a British officer who, allegedly in a letter that he sent back to his family in England, described his camp being disturbed nightly by howls and screams that seemed to come from just beyond the firelight. He wrote that his men were deeply unnerved and attributed the noises to a large creature that was somehow both stealthy and massive. The officer speculated that it might be a native animal unfamiliar to Europeans, but he noted that even the local guides seemed unsettled by the sounds. There were also tales of soldiers finding strange large footprints along trails in the New Jersey forest, prints that could not be attributed to any known animal, and these footprints were described as being larger than a human's, with toes that appeared to have claw-like impressions. A Continental soldier sketched one of these prints in his journal, noting that it was too large for a bear, yet unmistakably of a creature that walked on two legs. This creature, known as the Wood Devil, or Big Red Eye, continued to be sighted in New Jersey into the 19th and the 20th centuries, blending into the broader lore surrounding these Bigfoot-type creatures in North America. Modern cryptozoologists consider these Revolutionary War-era accounts to be some of the earliest recorded sightings of an Eastern Bigfoot-like creature, lending credibility to the idea that these large bipedal cryptids may inhabit all of these dense forests in North America. The documented encounters with the Wood Devil from soldiers and scouts provide one of the most compelling historical cases for cryptid sightings in Revolutionary America, with descriptions that do match sightings of similar creatures up to modern sightings, modern times. And these reports contribute to the rich tapestry, if you will, of unexplained phenomena and unexplained things experienced by soldiers and settlers during our nation's early years. Yet again, I am impressed with the cryptids that are seen during war times. I feel like such a strange and different type of cryptid comes out when two groups of people are at literal war with each other. You get something really strange in those times. But anyway, please don't forget to share the show with your friends. Thanks for tuning in to 21st Century Dystopian. Don't drink the water. And question everything.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.